Florida State entered one of the more crucial off seasons in program history. Michael, they had to hit home run after home run to get this thing back on track. And now we're going to kind of take a step back and take a big picture look and share our thoughts on how we think they've done so far. It's kind of about midway through the portal sessions here. The staff is out visiting high school recruits. And so it feels like a good time to kind of look at how they've done it a whole, how we feel they've done to get this thing back on track. And then the Final Four formula, Michael, how do you get into the playoffs? How far away is Florida State? And what do they got to do to get there? We're going to address that all in this episode coming up. So thank you for joining us, Snow Nation. We are Plant the Spear. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. And you know, Michael, if you think back to the days, remember when you used to have to bring your report card home to your parents and it was either like, hey, look at me, or oh, look out, it's about to be belt to butt time.
That's right.
Well, we're going to find out whether Mike Norvell is oh, look at me, or whether it's belt to butt time today. So I'm ready to get into this one. I think it's a fun episode. There's not a ton of news going on out there, so we thought this would be a good time to bring you an episode like this. So before we jump into it, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Jesse. Glad to be hanging out again and recording. Yeah, you know, I remember when I was a kid, we had discovered what a scanner was. And so if you had a bad grade on your report card, you tried to sneakily put that thing on a scanner and change the grade before it got home to your parents. Well, guess what, Mike Norvell? You can't scanner us. Mm-hmm. We've been watching. We've got the report cards, and we're ready to talk about that today.
Yeah, you ain't forging signature. You know, you always get your friend to forge it, and then you forge there, so that way you can't be guilty like you did it. So, But you know what, man? I think Mike Norvell is going to be safe this time around. No detention, no trip to the principal's office this time around, because I've actually think they've nailed this offseason about as good as you could expect from a 2-10 standpoint. And so we're going to address this from about four angles here. And the first one I want to start with is kind of what happened first, and that's the staff overhaul. You know, the clock hit zero on that Florida game, which really it didn't even make it to the zero, because you had already fired Adam Fuller, you had already fired Alex Atkins, and you had already hired Gus Norvell. That's basically Norvell. Who we got as our coach.
That's basically.
That's Gus Malzahn. So you pretty much already hired him. And so when you look at the staff overhaul, to look at the main names here on the staff, I think Gus, there's some trepidation with this hire, right? Some people think he's past his prime. Some people think that, yeah, he was a good coach, but that was 10, 15 years ago. I like the Gus hire because he's now an offensive coordinator. He doesn't have to focus on everything else, the NIL and all this stuff, which we've seen just take out college coaches left and right. He can focus on just putting together a good offense, and he has a great history of being a productive offensive coordinator. But I also think there's kind of a off-the-field addition from him that really is more important than almost what he brings on the field. And that's when you look at a guy who has been part of a national championship program at Auburn. He has been part of a national championship contending program when he was the head coach there, obviously, when we played. I think the experience of being at a big-time program that he can then pass on to Mike Norvell, I think will pay dividends going into the future, right? Because Mike Norvell's been a successful head coach, but he's never really been at a high level program, right? He's been at Arizona State. Right. They were pretty good there, but not like a real national title contending program. Memphis obviously was Memphis, and then he got close already at Florida State, which was great. But I think what Gus can show him is like, man, how to go into these living rooms and win recruiting battles against a guy like a Nick Saban, a guy like a Kirby Smart. You know, what a tough physical practice should look like, what these things should look like. I think that is what Gus, something besides what I think he's going to be a good offensive coordinator, because we know he's produced good offenses. I think that's going to be a huge addition from him. Just to what he's going to be able to pass on to Mike Norvell as still a young and growing coach. Now, I wouldn't want him as a head coach, but I think that's something that he could help make Mike Norvell a better coach.
Yeah, I would agree in a lot of those points that you've given. You know, I think one of the things that Gus Malzahn is known for around the coaching circles is, you know, I've heard a lot of other coaches talk about how he's a no-nonsense guy. Like, he's not going to put up with the shenanigans, with the nonsense, with the pouting, with the prima donna, like he will be done with it. And that's something I do appreciate about Gus, is that he's going to make you eat your BS, basically, to say that in that amazing. He's not
looks like a high school principal, doesn't he?
He does look like a high school principal. He really does. And he's got that thick Southern accent. He don't mess around. And so I really like that. Here's the thing. And you guys know, Plant Spear Nation, is that I have not been as huge on this hire from the very beginning. And reason being, just because I've seen, I live here in Florida, I've seen UCF. I watched it. I literally live 10 minutes from the stadium. I've been to some of their games, and if that's the version of Gus Malzahn we're getting, then yeah, I don't think this will be a great hire. But if we're getting the national championship era Gus Malzahn, where he's not focused on NIL recruiting and fundraising, he's not focused on all the ins and outs of being a CEO of a program, he's not focused any on so much of recruiting, even though there was this notion that when he came to Florida State that he wouldn't do off the campus recruiting, but there've been a lot of images of him and Mike Norvell going out recruiting. So I think we all got that wrong there, but he doesn't have to be the primary recruiter. He can just focus on the offense and some of the defensive areas of his area there. And he can get back into the lab and start really scheming up really good offenses. Then don't get me wrong, Gus was one of the best offensive minds in the country for the last 10 or so years. And so if he can get back to that, then this will be a slam dunk hire. Absolutely, for sure. I believe that. So, but I also agree with you that Mike Norvell is a successful coach. He has won. He's won everywhere he's been as a head coach, obviously at Memphis and at Florida State. He literally had Florida State on the cusp of being able to play in the playoff before the snub. So, yes, he does have that. But like you said, he also does not have championship experience. Being in a championship, a conference championship is one thing. A national championship is a completely different animal.
Right.
And so he doesn't have that experience. And so Gus Malzahn will be able to impart a lot of that wisdom and knowledge and discernment. And just kind of, he's been a mentor to Gus or to Mike Norvell. So if Mike's going to listen to anyone, and that was some of the things that were kind of, I want to say, speculated from what we heard around the people who cover Florida State, was that, Mike began to not necessarily trust the voices around him last season. Yeah. And so some of the decisions I got made were because Mike didn't trust him, which Mike had every reason not to trust him.
Yeah.
But the problem was, when you don't have voices that you don't trust, then you defer to your own wisdom. And just being real, sometimes our own wisdom is not the right wisdom. And so now that he'll have mentors in his on his staff with Gus Malzahn, that'll be a voice that he won't refuse to listen to.
Yeah, I agree. And again, now, while I painted it a little rosy there, I still have some nervousness too, because I still wonder, like, a lot of those best offenses that he put together were a long time ago.
That's right.
But if he can get that back, then I think he can be great in the role that he's in for you. And I also like what he brought over as far as the staff, with Herb Hand coming over on the offensive line. I think they did a great job with him. Obviously, you brought in a bunch of, he was able to go out and land a bunch of portal guys, held a couple of the high school guys there, and they're out recruiting now. So I'll be interested to see how he does there. I think he's a good coach.
Yep.
Hopefully he's a good recruiter too. But, we had a good recruiter and a bad coach before, and it didn't work out.
Right.
So,
that's right.
Give me a guy who can get a top five rushing offense with a bunch of 3 stars versus a guy who can get a bottom five offense with a bunch of 4 stars. And so that's what I'm looking at with him there. So I like that. I also, David Johnson, I didn't think needed to be moved around from the running backs coach there. Obviously, Tokars is still hanging around as the quarterbacks coach. I guess that's probably a little bit, don't know, because Gus typically coaches quarterbacks. So I'm sure there'll be some more involvement there, at least some more oversight into what they're doing at the quarterback position. The only one that I did have a little bit of kind of, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, is having a guy who's been basically a career running backs coach
to come in
as your wide receiver coach when he had only coached wide receivers for 1 year. That's not to say he can't do it. And I like the hire because he's got a lot of South Florida connections. He is a guy who has offensive coordinator experience. And he's been successful there at Florida International, there at UCF, with just some of the things that he's helped put together. Because, UCF, really, they suffered from bad defense.
That's right.
And we're going to talk about that later in the Final Four formula. But I think to just kind of put the offensive, focus on the coordinators and package up the rest of the offensive staff, I think overall it was an upgrade over what you had, especially at the offensive line position, which is what absolutely killed you last year. So, looking at the rest of the offensive staff, I think they did – again, coming off of where you're at, right? And I think, too, yeah, it would have been cool to get Brendan Marion, a young, upcoming coach and all that stuff. But you also have to understand that, like, A, we're coming off 2-10.
That's right.
And B, you needed to win right now. And so you couldn't take a lot of chances. And so I do like, looking at the offensive staff as a whole, I do like the rest of the hires that they built around Gus as well.
Yeah, I do too. I also agree with you on the wide receiver hire. But I wonder, though, is did they hire Tim Harris Jr.? I think that's his name, Tim Harris Jr. Yeah. Because, yes, he's a career running back head coach. But I wonder if they brought him in because he has the ability. Because, you know, when you coach running backs, part of teaching running backs, besides, you know how to get low, how to, you know, leverage the line, all that, is blocking.
Yeah.
And in Gus Malzahn's offense, if you're going to play wide receiver, you have to, Mike talked about this early on, and we saw this very prevalent in 2022 and 2023. Those wide receivers could block, right?
Yeah.
Now, I wonder if part of bringing that Tim Harris Jr. is to be able to bring some of that mindset to the wide receiver room of teaching that toughness, getting a little bit more tougher in the run game in that sense as well, too. Overall, I do think this is an upgrade. And I think the upgrade is more so in the sense you have a veteran play caller now that Mike Norvell doesn't have to worry about calling the plays, or at least focus as much on calling some plays. I'm sure Gus is going to call the majority of the plays, but I'm sure Mike's going to have a play call here or there too. Yeah. But then I think the offensive line, that's where the upgrade is. Now, again, this is a off season. This is before spring. This is pre-spring off season grading. Yeah. Now, we could get into fall camp and into the Alabama game and it'd be the worst hire in the world. But right now, we clearly believe that Herb Hand is a upgrade from Alex Atkins.
Yeah, this is like your first semester report card. We'll revisit at the halfway mark and then again at the season to get your final report there. But no, I do agree. And also one thing too, if Mike Norvell's not technically your play caller and your offensive coordinator, I mean, he was a wide receiver. He has coached wide receivers in the past. You also have David Johnson, who was a wide receiver coach as well. So you almost wonder if Mike Norvell is like, look, most of the time when you talk about receivers, it's about getting talented guys, not coaching them up. I mean, again, you're not teaching Keon Coleman how to catch the ball. You're just, you got to go get Keon Coleman. That's the ticket. And so I think this is one where, like, look, if there's a more fertile ground for receivers, it's in South Florida. So you bring in a guy that has the connections. Mike Norvell can kind of overlook that too. So I think that had a lot to do with that there. So I like the offensive staff. Now, when you move over to the defensive side of things, and also one thing that you're going to see a theme through the offense and the defense is continuity, because maybe he wasn't our first choice at the wide receiver coach, but you also did get Gus with his offensive line coach, with the receiver coach, who was also like a co-OC, call plays for a little bit there too. So you do have the continuity there, and him and Mike Norvell know each other. So it's like you can kind of get the ball rolling sooner.
Right.
But then when you look at the defensive side too, you also have continuity because you also brought over multiple coaches that have coached together before. And I think Tony White was not on my radar to begin with. Was not someone I was really super sold on. But then the more I looked into it, and after watching his introductory press conference, I love this hire. I think it's now I have my worries too.
You have your concerns. Yep.
I do have my concerns, but I do think this is a good hire. And I think really the key, as you'll see when we talk about that Final Four formula, is look, offense is fun to watch, but defense still wins championships. And so you need to have an elite level defense to get you where you want to go, which is what we expect at Florida State anyway, because that's what we're so used to. And so Tony White put together, you know, obviously he had success at Syracuse there and then moves over to Nebraska and has two top 20 defenses in back-to-back seasons there before heading to Florida State. My biggest complaint with Tony White is I don't think you're going to have him for more than about 2 years before he moves on to be a head coach. That I do worry about because he's already interviewed for head coaching jobs before while at Nebraska. So, but I love this hire. And then I think you also, man, obviously bringing in Pot Roast for his defensive line coach, Terrence Knighton, has been a home run to go with him because we've already seen the impact that you've had on recruiting there through the portal and also keeping Kevin Wynn, which is very highly credited to Odell. So shout out to Odell. But, you know, obviously he's going to want to know who his new position coach is there. So I like that as well. You know, and then just the rest of the defensive staff, you keep Pat Surtain, which I think was big too, because you could have easily lost him. So keeping him in the fold as well, I think it was very big for you there. And so, man, I think so far with what I've seen from the staff addition, you know, I think that one, these guys understand it too, because you've seen both of these coordinators say, look, there's nothing against the place that I was at, but I know for what Florida State is. I know Florida State is a sleeping giant. I know Florida State can win at the highest level, and that's why I want to be here. And that's the kind of guys that I like. They all talked about physical practice, which is something we've been begging Florida State to have for a long time. Like you said, they're no-nonsense guys. So, man, not only for the offense, but I like the defensive hires that they made here too, starting with Tony White, going to Pot Roast. Obviously, it was always going to be a difficult transition going away from Odell.
Yeah.
But we knew it had to be time, and I'm glad they kept him around the program, but it had to be done. But, man, I mean, again, you kept JP too, who, you know, you talk about that Penn State-Notre Dame game last night. JP would have found a way to block that game on a field goal one way or the other. So you wanted him as a special teams coordinator there. But yeah, man, I just looking at overall this staff as a whole, man, I think coming from where you're at, maybe you could have got some bigger names. But, you know, coming off a 2-10 season, when you need to win right now, you needed high floor guys that have a potential high ceiling. I think they nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they did a good job, because you weren't going to go get a defensive coordinator from a Final Four playoff team, because they're not coming to a 2-10 team unless you're offering them $10 million and you're not paying a defensive coordinator $10 million. Right. So you had to go get a defensive coordinator from a school that was maybe not in the top 25, top 15, but yet could coordinate a defense and saw the potential of what they were going to get at Florida State. And let's be real. Nebraska is a, you know, legacy program in college football. You might even consider them a blue blood of college football, but they ain't Florida State. Florida State is a new blood and yet has more prestige and more championship. I mean, just like more, a lot of everything. And you can recruit here. You are in the hotbed of recruiting. I mean, we grow five-star players on trees around here. Nebraska grows five-star players nowhere. Okay?
On trees in Florida.
On trees in Florida, exactly. And so, yeah, to be able to get a Tony White. Now, I was really excited about Tony White. It was like the opposite for me. I was jonesing on this hire. There are some concerns. There's a couple times his defense does put up stinkers. But for the most part, this is a top 20 defensive guy. He's no nonsense. They're going to be physical. Pot Roast, you know, he is a what we call new age, you know, player coach. He's developed off defensive lineman. Love Odell. Shout out Odell. Glad he's going to be around the program. But everyone was saying it was time. You kept Patrick Surtain. JP moved over to the linebacker spot. And I think this is a really good, at least right now, they've nailed the hires for this.
Yeah, and I think it's important that what you said, like, it may not have came off a top 25 team, but when you look at their side of the ball from what they can control, it was a, for all intents and purposes, a top 20 team, a top 20 defense, and a pretty good offense there at UCF. But yeah, I mean, and I would consider Nebraska blue blood, but that blue blood has bled out over the last few years. So not looking good there. And so, yeah, man, I mean, that's the thing too. When you talk about like where they're at, if they could do what they did at the programs that they were at, and then you can put them in a place where it's easier, not guaranteed, but easier to acquire talent, you would hope they could take that to the next level. And so, man, I think, when you look back at the staff that we had, and no disrespect to the guys, because they put together last season too, but they put together 23-4. When I look at this staff versus the old staff, it just feels different, right? You see a lot of big-time football on this staff versus guys that, you know, you had a linebacker coach that had washed out at every school in Florida. You had an offensive line coach from Charlotte. You know what I mean? Like, just things like that. And so I think they did very well with that. One of the other places that I want to cover here, one of the other points, was roster retention. And I think, you know, this one is a little bit less of a talking point, but it is also important, man. After 2-10, you could have seen a flood of players hit the portal.
That's right.
And when you look at some of the guys that were good on a bad team, and you know how tampering works nowadays. I'm sure there were guys that probably had offers. I mean, I'm sure people saw what Landon Thomas did at tight end. I'm sure they saw what some of these guys were doing. And so really, to me, I think your only painful loss was Luke Kromenau at quarterback. And I think you'll recover over time. And yes, I know you lost a couple starters with guys like Pat Payton or Marvin Jones Jr., but you know, most of us know that I feel like what you've brought in you've done a good enough job of replacing that, that it's a net positive for you the end. Now we'll see, because it's got to play out on the field. But I think they did a really good job with roster retention. I mean, we tend to forget because of how bad last year was. Like, you still have Jalen Lucas coming back, who played in one or two games and was averaging, I think he got injured in Boston College, but he was your most explosive player by a long shot. He was like 6 yards a play, and then he went out. He's going to be back. Richie Leonard was your best guard and didn't get to play very long. He went out. He's going to be back. So you managed to keep a lot of these guys. You managed to keep a lot of your young core nucleus of talent to go around, you know, to go with the portal additions that we're going to talk about in here in just a second. But yeah, man, I think overall, like, just the roster retention of coming in here with a new staff off a 2-10 team. Yeah, we lost 20 guys, but none of them felt like really impact guys other than Luke Komenhoff. And chances are he wasn't going to start next year anyway. So you have time to figure that out. So I think they did a great job with that as well.
Well, I think it's so interesting when you talk about this of who transferred in versus who transferred out. You know, On3 has a transfer in, transfer out kind of metric where they rank teams.
Your exchange rate, as I like to call it. Exchange rate,
yes. And when you look at Florida State's history, now, this might be more of an indictment on the coaching of that previous coaching staff, but when you look at Florida State's history in the transfer portal, outside of a very few, and I can't even think of maybe one or two that actually made an impact when they transferred, those that have transferred out of Florida State have done zilch to zero in wherever they've gone, right? And two came back, and then one transferred back out again.
Yeah.
So that is probably an indictment on the recruiting that Florida State has done previously. But also, the guys that are transferring out have been low to no impact players. Yes, I think personally, the one that kind of makes you be like, I didn't really want that, was Luke Komenhoff, because he was a future star who I believe could have thrived in a Gus Malzahn offense.
I agree.
You know, for him, he felt like he couldn't, but what we saw, the little bit we got to see, I felt like a Gus Malzahn offense would have been a great fit. Regardless of that, he's going to go to Mississippi State and drown in cowbells and not win any games, and he'll be misery for it. But the fact of the matter is that the players that they brought in were high productive players. They got back to the formula that got them to 23-4. Because if you look over that time, you look at the 0-4 start to the 5-3 finish, to the 10-3 season, to the 13-0 season, every transfer portal season, they were bringing in productive players who had proven at whatever level they came from that they could produce at a high level. And then they went off the script coming out of the snub season and got a couple productive players, but more so players who had great big potential.
Right. Well,
that didn't work. And so what they do, they went back to the formula. They got more productive players. They re-emphasize and hopefully will continue to deeply emphasize high school recruiting. And I think that's what, when you look at that exchange rate for the transfer portal, I thought they did a good job of saying, okay, we got to get back to the formula that actually brought us success.
Yeah, and I think you lead right into my third point, which is what they've been able to do in the portal in relatively short amount of time, kind of hitting the ground running. And I think they did a great job. Now, again, I understand that maybe some of the names aren't huge.
Right.
But that's what bit us in the butt last year was you brought in big names that had no proof that they were going to be any good. Now you have guys who maybe they're superstars, maybe they're not. Like Deuce Robinson can be a superstar for you.
That's right.
I think Squirrel White can be a great player for you. But you got guys that you've proven. Like, give me all the Jamie Robinsons in the world. He was an all-ACC guy 2 years in a row. Your leading tackler 2 years in a row. I love that kind of player, that just kind of productive dog that's going to go out on the field and they're going to work for it. And I think that's what you've done a good job of bringing in. And, you know, I do think that the main focus that to give them credit for in the portal is they brought in players at positions of need. They addressed major positions of need. I mean, when you look at last year, and you know, we will say this until the cows come home. Maybe we can borrow a cowbell from Mississippi State to call them home. But when you look at last year's team, if you gave them the 2022 offensive line, that team makes a bowl.
Oh.
If you nothing works without fixing the offensive line. But what was probably your next biggest problem? Your wide receivers who couldn't catch the ball.
Correct.
So you go out and you bring in a couple of wide receivers who can come in and be day one starters for you.
Correct.
then you bulk up the defensive line. And, you know, I had a comment on social media the other day that someone was talking about, well, you know, why are we taking so many defensive linemen? And I was looking at it, it's like, well, we lost 9 scholarship defensive linemen, and we only brought in 4 from the portal. And one of the things that people have to keep in mind is Tony White even said in his introductory press conference that the primary reason he runs 3-3-5 is because he's been a lot of places where you couldn't recruit defensive line and have depth.
Right.
And so now I think he's just trying to build that depth so he can be multiple, because that's what he really wants to do. You will see odd and even fronts. And so I think, you know, addressing that, getting proven run stopping linebackers has been big as well. You got some guys that are 1-year rentals, and I get the frustration with that, but you need to win right now to get those high school guys. But you also brought in a couple guys that do have a 2 and maybe even 3 years, like the Caleb kid of eligibility. So you brought in some for the now and some for the future. So, man, I really think, you know, when you look at the portal, and I think you also, you know, when you talk about the quarterback, obviously the one you have to really look at in the portal. I know people are hit or miss on Thomas Castellanos, but I'm telling you, like, if you can get the 2023 running, even a resemblance of it, I'm not saying he's got to run for over 1,000, but I think you probably need him to be around 600-800, which is pretty common for Gus Malzahn's offense.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think if he can throw for 2,500 yards next year, you know, he threw 18 touchdowns in, what, just a couple of games, seven games this year. So, man, I think this is a pretty good addition when you talk about fitting the system. I mean, look at the quarterback for Penn State. Notre Dame, Riley Leonard.
Yeah.
He's thrown 18 touchdowns in 15 games now?
Yep.
Thomas Castellanos threw 18 in basically 7 games because he barely played in a Syracuse game. So I think you did a good job of addressing needs and bringing in guys that fit your offense. Gus likes to throw the ball deep. You brought in a 6'6 wide receiver. So I think what they did in the portal, and again, I know they're probably going to want to get away from the portal over time.
Yes.
But addressing the needs that you had right now that you did not have high school players ready to step into that role, I think they did a great job.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And just to go back to your the use of Riley Leonard at Notre Dame. I mean, if you watch that game against Penn State, he couldn't throw the ball to save his life.
He's a terrible quarterback.
But they went, Notre Dame puts a high emphasis on that offensive line, okay? High emphasis on the offensive line. Now, I will say that if you look at the transfer portal, like of the final 4 teams, I think there was a total of, let me look at that number. I had it real quick. There was a total of...
Well, and I will say this in the meantime, you know, people talk about the portal and what they love and what they don't. Do keep in mind, 3 out of the 4 starting quarterbacks in the final 4 were transfers. And the non-transfer just lost to the transfer.
Correct.
In the Penn State Notre Dame game. So, yeah, I mean, the portal is a part of everybody's roster. It's just it's just a bigger piece of the pie in ours right now.
Notre Dame had 5 transfers who started. Ohio State has 5, Texas has 4, and Penn State had 4 transfers. Of those transfers, only 1 was on the offensive line of the final 4. Only 1, okay? And so Notre Dame places a high priority on the offensive line development with a quarterback who can barely throw, and yet they won a game. They've been winning games. They beat Georgia. They beat Georgia's defense, which is not the all-world defense, but pretty good. Yeah. And then they beat Penn State, which is a really good defense last night, with a quarterback who can't throw the ball. So for me, the whole Thomas Castellano can't throw the ball is out the window for me. I am worried about, can we get our offensive line adequate enough for us to operate a competent offense? And I think them going out and making sure that they're like, okay, we've got to address this offensive line because we've had lackluster development and recruitment. Thank you, Alex Atkins, around that. So they went out and addressed that. And I thought that was super important. Now, let me say this for you fans out there who are maybe a little bit of negative Nancy's. Yes, did Florida State have some misses in the transfer portal this season? Absolutely. Could they have done a better job? Absolutely. But you have to caveat that with they were in flux. They were in transition with the coaching staff. You know, maybe they didn't have everything worked out well. Maybe what we don't get to know is, did they have this kid as a high priority as the fans did? Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't.
Right.
Maybe they really wanted somebody and it just didn't work out because the number was stupid. Right. All right. that to say is that they went out and addressed, and I don't think they're done. Like we said, we've been saying, we think they need at least two more offensive linemen, maybe another defensive lineman, maybe one more linebacker. And if a Keon Coleman-like wide receiver pops up in the portal at some point in time, you better be darn sure they're going to go get him. So, again, I think that I look at the overall of this, and I think this has been, at this point in time, they've done the best they can, and I am pleased at this point of the offseason what they've done.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, could they have added a few more pieces, maybe high level guys? Sure. But again, you're coming off a 2-10 season with an overhauled staff. And even when they missed on a couple of guys, like, yes, you would love to have had the Faison kid from Utah State.
Yeah.
But as we get into the next arm, the final arm of what we're going to talk about with the offseason here is the high school recruiting. Yeah, you might have missed on him, but you also went out and got the Chroma kid at running back. And so that's right. You know, that like you had some other plans there. And so that's the other thing, man. When you talk about the high school recruiting, because I know this is what everybody really wants to see, because again, we know that the portal has been good to us in the past and it's been bad to us in the past. And everybody in the fan base really just kind of wants to see high school recruiting be the main emphasis. And we're there with you. But I think they did a pretty daggone good job for like a break glass in case of emergency situation. When you come in here and your class is just falling apart left and right, guys are decommitting, flipping to other places. And then you come in and you have what, like 2 weeks or something before, or a week before the signing day, I don't even think half your coaches were even named yet.
Right.
And so you take the class that I believe was somewhere around 53rd on like the day before signing day. And it's the 21st ranked class in the 247 rankings. That's a heck of a job,
yes,
the way they closed. And I think just the way they closed, which has been something that has been obviously a frustration in the past with the way we've closed, I think that is something that you have to be excited about. I mean, again, you went out and you flipped Chroma from Georgia, a team that did not go 2-10.
That's right.
You kept Kevin Wynn, someone that everybody wanted. You know, you went out and got the quarterback, Kevin Sperry, who when you needed a quarterback to replace maybe some guys that were leaving, and we thought that's it was because the guy was coming over from Oklahoma. But no, you just went out and got him. You know, you kept some of these guys. You signed some other guys here that, you know, other teams were after, like Chase Lofton, the tight end. You went out and signed some big wide receivers.
Yes.
I really like the high school class that they brought in. And so to me, when you even consider in the very small sample size of what we have seen from this staff on the high school recruiting aspect, I think they're already off to a good start. Now, as we talked about in the intro of the episode, they're out visiting guys now, and you hope that they can continue to add to that 2026 class, because last time I checked, it was a top five class. And so they are, if they can keep that together and then add to it very early in the rankings, that, man, I think they're off to a really good start. And I think you can see the potential to where if you can get back to, say, 7-9 wins in year one, I think you're going to see that high school recruiting ball really start to get rolling and snowball really fast.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, Jesse, we both agree that this class should have been not even ranked in the top 25, not even ranked in the top 50, not even ranked in the top 100.
You're lucky you landed anybody.
Exactly. That's how desolate this class was. I mean, people were dropping out left and right day by day. And for this coaching staff to come in and Mike Norvell to literally pull up his bootstraps and just go ham on this class with whatever coaches he had. And let me just say, shout out to some of the previous coaching staff who fulfilled their duties and kept recruiting, even though they probably knew this was it for them. And
not you, Alex Atkins.
And not you, Alex Atkins. Thank you very much. We know what you did, but they were able to salvage this class and get a decent class that can be a foundation piece to what they get, what they can build. And if they can continue to win, like you said, they can go 8-4. They can get to 9-3. They can maybe sneak into the ACC championship, maybe sneak into a playoff, whatever it is. As they continue to do that now with better recruiters, who's going to put an emphasis on high school recruiting, now you might be able to start seeing those classes where we thought Florida State should be, where they should be in the top 10, should be approaching a top five class every single year because of the hotbed of the state that you live in. Absolutely. And my favorite recruit of this high school class is the Javion Boggs kid, the 6'1" out of Coco. I mean, that boy, woo,
come on now.
He's going to be dynamic as a wide receiver in this offense. And they kept Kevin Wynn. They went out and got the Uzma kid from Georgia that Georgia really wanted. This wasn't a kid that Georgia was like, all right, we got a bunch of you. No, Georgia fought to the very end. They really wanted this kid. And for Florida State to flip him and get him here, that's a big win. And that could be a foundation that they build on. So I was really with where it could have been to where it ended up being. Again, no, we would rather it be better. But to where it ended up being, I thought they did a admirable job of getting this high school class where it is.
Right. I mean, you just rewind to the year before where we lost a big battle for KJ Bolden to Georgia when we were coming off a much better season. And now you go toe-to-toe and you take a recruit that's, by the way, from Georgia. So
that's right.
Out of their backyard. So I think they did a really good job. And like I said, you can see the potential going forward. And you hope that this staff can be better at getting the most out of the talent that they're bringing in, because that was another issue that we had, especially on the offensive line there with the last staff. So I think when you really kind of look at the big picture of everything that we just talked about, we've seen the high school recruiting potential there in a very short view. We've seen them be able to keep some players, which means these players want to play for these guys. They've met, they've had the meetings, they've had the talks, and they said, you know what, I want to stay around and be a part of this. You know, you see where the staff hires. I think, you know, maybe you could have done better in one or two little spots, but I think given the situation that you were in, they did a great job. I think when you talk about the portal, like we said, maybe you could have got a couple other guys, but knowing where you're at, I think they did good with that too. So could it have been better in certain areas? Sure, I'll give you that. Are there some concerns with some guys? Sure, I'll give you that too. You know, like I forgot to mention with Tony White, like, you know, he had a great defense there at Nebraska. Anytime he played a team with a really a great offense, that boy gave us some points. Now he gave
it, you know, a stinker. Yeah, exactly.
Look at the Indiana and the Michigan game from the last 2 years, if you're wondering what I'm talking about. So I still have some nervousness with some of these, but I think knowing where you're coming from and knowing the all-encompassing view that we just talked about, I think I give them a B+ so far in this offseason. Now, again, this is kind of like the first semester, because you still have a second portal season to go. Correct. You still could lose some. You still could gain some. So we'll have to revisit that. You have to see how it looks after spring, you know, how this team develops together. And then obviously none of this really matters until you see how it looks on the field. I think as a whole, coming off of the season that we had and how downtrodden as a fan base we were and how we were like, we didn't know where we were going to go, what directions, what was this even going to look like? Was he going to fire two coaches, the whole staff? Was half the team going to hit the portal? Were we going to be able to get anybody out of the portal? Considering all that nervousness that we had, man, I got to give them a B+, because I think they did as good as you could have asked for.
Yeah, I would agree. I was thinking B+ as well too. I thought they were able to salvage some things. I thought they were able to make some good hires. And I thought the messaging also as well from Mike Norvell is huge. It's important. We want to hear that this is as painful for a $10 million coach as it is for people and fans who don't make $10 million. We want to know that our coach is hurting just as hard as we are hurting, and that they care and they're going to do everything within their possibility, both legal and illegal, according to the NCAA, to make this work, to fix
this. I hope so.
Look, the rules are out the door these days, so we might as well take advantage of them too. Okay. Cause everybody else is, but it was great to hear that messaging that this was going to get fixed immediately. And so we hope that Mike Norvell continues to hold his word. So yeah, I'd say B+. Now, again, you're going to hear us, Noel Nation, come back after springtime. We're probably going to have grades then, because we'll get to see some of it on the field. And then you're going to hear us come out of fall camp, probably with some grades of like, okay, based on what we're hearing, how do we feel about the team going into the Alabama game? And then you're going to really get to see it. So make sure you only hold this with a very thin layer of whatever the saying is. Like, hold this with a grain of salt, because this is just right now. We'll be able to continue to evaluate as we get into the offseason and spring.
Yeah, this is very much an on paper grade. You know, we have to see the proof yet. But you know, Michael, you know who you never have to see the proof of, because you already know they're elite.
Come on now.
That is today's sponsor, Alumni Hall FSU. And look, guys, we've been talking about it, you know, new gear for the new year. Look, these guys, baseball season's coming up. They got individual gear for like baseball, for basketball. They just got in some new youth basketball jerseys I saw on social media today. They obviously have football gear. If you're actually an alumni, they are Alumni Hall. They have stuff for FSU grads too. So make sure you check those guys out. 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, as well as online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page. They also have an app if you want to make it easy. So it is the ultimate Seminole shopping experience. And if you're going to be there, Michael, you might as well save some coin and use code SPEAR to save 10%. So thank you to Alumni Hall for sponsoring this episode. And thank you to you guys for supporting those that have supported us, because they've been with us for quite a while now. So, Michael, let's get into something that I concocted last night while I was watching that Penn State Notre Dame game. And that is what I call the Final Four formula. Now, obviously, we know Florida State was near the Final Four of the bottom last year. So, you know, we started at the bottom. We hope to get here by the end of the season, but we are not there yet. But we were close in 2023. And I think it's important when you talk about going into next season. You know, I understand 2-10 will live in the back of our minds until it doesn't. But I think it's important to also remember that each season is kind of in a vacuum nowadays. Like when you look at bringing in a lot of these new guys, you have an entire new staff. You have a new quarterback, a new offensive line. You have new linebackers. You have new defensive line. This is a new team.
That's right.
There is nothing outside of the record itself and your head coach and that would indicate that this team should go 2-10 because of the last team went 2-10.
That's right.
It's a different team and it's a different staff. So with that being said, if you wipe the slate clean, because hey, we're 0-0 right now. We're not 2-10 anymore. We're 0-0. So watching that game last night, I'm like, you know what? This is where we want to be. This is where we want to get to. And what are these teams? What are some of, you know, most of you guys know I'm kind of a stat head, right? I love to dig into numbers. You know, it's like CSI for college football. That's what I love to do. And so I was like, let me just start looking at these teams and look at what it takes to get here. And how far do we have to go? Where do we need to be? And so that's where my Final Four formula comes in to kind of show you where the measuring stick is, where we're at, and where we're trying to go. And so starting out, obviously, as we mentioned earlier, we're going to focus on the Final Four teams because, hey, look, it's fun to make it into the playoffs, but a lot of those teams got their butts whipped. And so we're going to look at the kind of the best of the best, the teams that survived that first round and made it into the Final Four. Obviously, we know one game has been played. Depending on when you're watching this, one game has not yet. Ohio State, Texas play tonight. But we mentioned earlier in the show, look, offense is fun to watch.
That's right.
Defense still wins championships.
That's right. That's right.
And the one thing that I noticed when you look at the four teams, this is Ohio State, Notre Dame, Texas, and Penn State. When you start looking with the defense first, the one thing that they all have in common is they all have a top 10 defense, scoring defense, that is. Yardage doesn't matter. Points are what wins you games.
That's right.
Top 10 scoring defense, holding opponents under an average, just doesn't mean every game, but a season average of under 16 points per game. So you got to have a good defense, man. That and here's one more interesting aspect of it is every game of the playoffs, the team with the higher ranked defense won.
That's right.
If that doesn't tell you how important having a good defense is, I don't know what does. And I think you also have to be able to have that defense, not just shut out some cupcakes. You have to be able to perform on the biggest stage. Because when you look at a lot of these teams and their season averages versus their playoff averages, Texas is the only one that strays pretty far away, more than 10 points off their season average.
Right.
But they have an offense that can kind of overcome that. So you got to have a good defense, and you have to be able to perform at the on the big stage. Now, knowing that all the playoff teams had a top 10 defense that held teams under 16 points per game, well, where's Florida State at? Now, we're not going to look at Florida State's numbers last year, right? Because we know it wasn't great. Now, the defense wasn't terrible. It was below average. We'll just say that. We're going to look at the staff that basically you got from Nebraska and what That's can right. Tony White do, because we're expecting you to basically bring Nebraska's production over. And as we mentioned before, when we were talking about the coaching staff, you also would hope that when you get to a place like Florida State and you can acquire more talent, that they could potentially be better than where they were at in their previous stop. So when you look back at Nebraska's scoring defense the past 2 years, Tony White has had a top 20 defense in both years. In 2024, it was ranked 17th, and in 2023, it was ranked 13th. In 2024, they gave up an average of 19.5 points per game, and in 2023, they gave up 18.3 points per game. Now, there are, across the board, better offenses in the ACC than the Big Ten. This has always been one of my concerns with a Big Ten defensive coordinator is their offenses are pretty bad across the board. But you see what we just talked about. When you have all top 10 defenses averaging under 16 points per game, and you're bringing in a defensive coordinator along with multiple staff members from that defense, that defensive staff, that were top 20 already, top 15 in one of those years, and averaging under 20 points a game in two consecutive years. So you're hoping that if that's your starting block, yeah, you're almost to what you need to be in the playoffs anyway. So that you're hoping that you can get that in a little bit. Some, you know, that you're probably like that 12 team playoff level right now defense. But I think one more step and you could be to that final four type of defense. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. There's a lot of other factors that go into it besides what your offensive defense do. You know, you got some luck, some turnovers, some field goals, things like that. But you imagine that from this aspect, you're getting basically like Nebraska's defense and UCF's offense. And that's kind of the way we're approaching it. You know, I know UCF was not that successful when they made the jump to from G5 to P4. Obviously, that's going to be – there's a transition period, right? You have to obtain the athletes and everything that goes into that. Most of the teams that do it, they don't win right away.
Yeah.
SMU was kind of a, you know, kind of a unicorn there. Gus was hamstrung by bad defenses at UCF. And granted, he's in charge of hiring the defensive coordinator. He doesn't call the defense. He didn't hire this defensive coordinator. So UCF had the 82nd ranked defense, giving up 26.9 points per game last year. And in 2023, they had the 61st ranked defense, giving up 25.8 points per game. So you can see that the defense had a lot to do with why they struggled there at UCF. So Gus, because we're going to talk about the offense in a second, but if you're just taking Nebraska's defense, man, you're right on the cusp already.
Yeah. And I think it could be if they can transition that over to Florida State and they can get the same type of production against what, yes, the offenses might be a little bit better than what you're probably getting in the Big Ten, because, you know, ACC offenses tend to be better. It's where the defense is concerned. So if you can transition that type of defense in the productive players already here, you're already starting from a better foundation of a level to be able to compete with maybe teams that are in the top 12, which end up in the playoffs, right? It might put you in that vicinity to compete with a Clemson, who was in the ACC championship, compete with an SMU. It's crazy for me to even say that.
I know.
But they got into the college football playoff. And so you might be able to raise the level and the bar of that defense if you're able to compete there. Now, again, it's not going to be that it's a one for one, that the transfer is going to be very easy, because Nebraska had types of players that could do what they needed to do.
Right.
Also, they were going against Big Ten offenses, which, let's be real, it's about 3 yards in a cloud of dust for most Big Ten offenses. So it's going to be an adjustment here playing in the ACC against the teams that we do. But if you can find some translatable characteristics and traits of that defense and get that out of the players, you're already setting yourself up for a better opportunity to potentially get into the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, because, I mean, really outside of Oregon and Ohio State, maybe USC on a good year, there's not a ton of great offenses there. But again, keep in mind that even when Adam Fuller was here and had the two top 20 defenses in 22 and 23, we went 23-4, we're in position to make the playoffs there. So it just goes to show you how important having that top 20 defense is and then what it can do for you as well. And guess what? Tony White produced top 20 defenses. He didn't have Jared Verse. He didn't have Braden Fisk. He didn't have all these guys. I mean, I saw the other day, you know, shout out to Renardo Green, I think set like the rookie record at San Francisco for the most PBUs. Jared Verse is PFF's whatever you want to call it, like player of the year.
Defensive rookie of the year.
There you go. Defensive rookie of the year. So, I mean, like, he didn't necessarily have all that talent. That's not saying they just had a bunch of scrubs, but you give him that ability, you give him those types of players, and if he can produce a top 15 level defense in the ACC, as long as your offense isn't like it was last year, just hot dumpster juice, then you're probably where you want to be. And so, man, I think the defense is obviously still the key. And so that's why I think if you can get what you got out of Tony White from what he did at Nebraska, your defense, from just a defensive aspect, because we know the defense wasn't as bad as the offense last year. You know, the offense didn't help the defense either.
Correct.
You're on the cusp of being where you want to be. And now when you flip the page over to offense is, it's very critical, obviously, but it still needs to be good, but maybe not as great. As long as you have that as long as you have that great defense. And so I think the interesting thing is here, when you look at the offense, so we know that Gus is typically a more run-heavy offensive type of guy. Now, they throw the ball better, and I think it's funny. Okay. The more you look into their passing stats, they're actually a pretty good passing offense when it comes to the numbers that they put up. But the point is, when I look at the scoring offenses, every offense in the Final Four was at least top 25. Penn State was the worst at 24th. Every single one of them averaged over 33 points per game. And it's not like they were elite offenses because, yes, Notre Dame was fourth in the country at 37.7 points per game. But Florida State was, you know, 36, 38 points a game, especially right. with Jordan Travis over the last couple of years. So if you can get back to that, then you're right there, obviously. And so one, and I'll dig into a little bit of this more in just a second, but again, when you look at where you need to be, top 25, averaging at least over 30 points a game, 31 points a game. I think that's at least where you need to be. You'd like to be over 34 points a game on average. Of course, you're going to have to score more to that on some instances, and some you may not need that much. I mean, look at Notre Dame. They've won, what, three playoff games now without needing to score over 20 points because of their defense, or excuse me, 27 points because they've been so good on defense. But the where you're coming from is Gus did have a top 50 offense, so it wasn't the greatest. But I think when you look at offensive rankings, it can be a little tricky because you can have a half a point separate 20 teams.
That's right.
The average point total that they put up over the past two seasons is 30.4 in 24 and then 31.3 points per game in 2023. So you're about 3 to 4 points a game shy of where you need to be. Now, the reason I included 2023 was because we also know that UCF had a disaster of a quarterback room last year. Now, Gus gets blamed for that too, but KJ Jefferson didn't work out. Then they turned to the kid from Miami, the transfer there as well. And then they ended up going to a freshman who they were the spaghetti model. Like, let's just throw something against the wall and see what sticks. So if you can, again, and I think, you know, when we talk about what you can get at Florida State versus UCF versus Nebraska, the gap is so much bigger of what you're going to get at Florida State versus UCF than Florida State and Nebraska, because it's just not the same level there. And so if you're averaging over 30 points a game already, and then you give him Florida State's talent, and let's face it, ACC defenses aren't great. Now, neither is the Big 12. They're certainly not known for defenses, although they have some good ones. Man, again, you are on the verge of being where you need to be at that playoff level. If you can, if Gus can do, you know, again, if you talk about a copy and paste, and again, like you mentioned, this is not guaranteed. There is nothing that says it's going to happen next year, but hypothetically, that's why we're talking. This is off season. This is what we're doing right now. It's talking season. If you can have a defense that's holding under 20 points a game and an offense that's averaging over 30 points a game, you're going to be in a position to succeed. We already said Gus's biggest problem was his defense. Well, same with Tony White. We talked about this. It may not be a top 25 team, but it's top 25 on your side of the ball. Well, here's the thing. Man, Nebraska's offense is an absolute boat anchor for Tony White's defense. In 2024, Nebraska's offense was ranked 103rd and scored 23.5 points per game. In 2023, they were even worse at 123rd, scoring an average of 18 points per game. They were basically our offense last year. So he was – I think the reason I bring that up is because when you look at the records of the team that they came from, you're going to immediately go – yeah, but there wasn't a lot of success in the win-loss column. So even if they're good coaches, is it going to translate to wins? Well, they can only control really one side of the ball. And so Gus was hamstrung by a bad defense, but his offense wasn't bad, and Tony White vice versa. So when you look at what they were able to do there, man, again, on the offensive side, just like the defensive side, if you can get what you got already, we're not asking you to do something crazy. Just do what you've been doing and then a little bit more. You are on the cusp.
Now, let me ask you a question, Jesse. How good was the 2023 offense? If you actually thought about it, how good actually was that 23 offense, right? Because if you have Jordan Travis, you have a mediocre line that was able to at least pass protect, because you could not run the ball. Without Trey Benson doing something miraculous a few times a game, and you had elite wide receivers. That was your offense, right? Yeah. So if you can have a moderate to good offensive line, you have a couple of really good wide receivers, and you have a quarterback that's not going to put you in danger,
right,
with a top 20 defense, then you already ascend into that level of being able to be in the conversation of being one of the best offenses in the ACC.
Right.
If you can run the ball. I mean, if you look at Clemson and SMU, crazy to even say SMU again, but if you look at what made them successful, they could run the ball at will, yeah, right?
Yep.
That 2022 FSU offense could run the ball at will. And yeah, if it wasn't for that three-game stretch against NC State and Clemson and Wake Forest, they're in the Final Four as well. So, yeah, again, if they can just have a moderate to good offensive line, that's what it comes back to me. Because I think Castellanos can you saw what he did at Boston College. He can get you touchdowns if you give him time, yeah, to give you touchdowns, right? If you get wide receivers that can actually get open and have a better catch radius and less drops and not be one of the worst drop teams in the country behind Georgia, which was the worst this year, then you can have a successful offense. That offensive line allows you to run. It allows you to do other things, allows you to get creative. And then, of course, if you have a top 10 or top 20 defense backing you up, allowing you to actually put some margin in the game, then yes, that'll put you in the, at least in the conversation. If you pair the two, you now have a working team to be able to then be in the vicinity of a 12-team playoff.
Right, because that 2022 offense, really technically, if you know, really even on paper too, was actually better than the 2023 offense.
Correct.
And if you think about it, there was significantly less star power.
That's right.
Johnny Wilson wasn't quite the form that he was his last year. You didn't have Keon Coleman. You had Trey Benson, but it was his very first year. Jordan Travis had a great year that year. The difference was the offensive line. So like you said, man, if you fix that offensive line and you have a quarterback that doesn't put you in danger, that's a recipe for success. And so we've seen Mike Norvell be able to put together some really good offenses. We've seen Gus Malzahn be able to put together some really good offenses. And the last thing I want to say on the offensive side of things is, look, you have to get there, but it doesn't really matter how you do it, right? Again, people will be like, but can you throw the ball into Gus Malzahn offense? It's so run heavy. Well, here's the interesting thing. When you look at the Final Four of the playoffs, it's a great example because you have two teams who are run dominant teams, and then you have two teams who are pass dominant teams. And so when you look at the rushing offense, the best rushing offense in the playoffs is Notre Dame at 11th, averaging 218 yards per game. Well, guess what UCF's was last year? Fifth in the country, averaging 248 yards per game. In 2023, they were also fifth at 228 yards per game. So even at a school like UCF, you had a better rushing offense the past 2 years than any of the teams in the Final Four currently. Now, you're going to have to be able to throw the ball too, but you see the picture that I'm getting here. I mean, Texas is the worst rushing offense because Notre Dame is at 11th. Penn State is at 18th, both averaging over 200 yards a game. Ohio State, Texas were down below at 169 and 165, 53rd and 63rd. So it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't very good. But Gus had a better rushing offense than all of those guys. And then when you flip over to the passing side of things, it's kind of vice versa for the teams we just talked about. Texas is at the top of the food chain there with the 14th ranked passing offense at 279 yards per game. Ohio State is 29th at 263. Those are your top two teams. Now, Penn State was a little bit farther down there, 234 yards a game, 58th. But Notre Dame, who, by the way, is going to the national championship, theirs was terrible. Again, yep, we just talked about how Riley Leonard was not a great quarterback.
No.
The 108th ranked passing offense, averaging only 189 yards per game. Now, UCF last year was 97th at 200 yards per game. Again, terrible quarterback play. In 2023, they were 42nd in the country at 259. So again, man, if you have the 42nd ranked passing offense, that's when he actually had a consistent starter throughout the year, right? 42nd ranked offense, that puts you third out of the four teams. And then you already had a better rushing offense than every team in the playoffs. Again, it's funny because someone made a comment on the last episode, like, thanks for the dose of hopium. Look, hope is not a strategy, but what we're saying is on paper, You can see it. You can see the formula. You can see how close Florida State is to if they can do these things, they can get back. Now, again, it doesn't necessarily matter how you get there, whether it be run or pass heavy, as long as you get there. So if you are a top 25 offense, but you're run heavy or whatever, it doesn't necessarily matter as long as you get there. And so the other thing, too, I think is you also have to protect the ball. That was one thing, too, because most of these teams were very high in turnover margin, right? They did not turn the ball over a lot as well. Like Notre Dame right now, they are third in turnover margin. So they are also, you got to be able to, they got to be efficient. You got to score 6 points when you get the chance. Can't rely a lot on field goals, because actually this is kind of crazy. Notre Dame was 88th in red zone scoring this year, but they were 16th in touchdown percentage and 132nd in field goals. They're not kicking field goals. They're getting points.
Yeah.
And this is a complete side note, Michael, my goodness, man, this just tells you where we were at. Notre Dame scored 70 touchdowns last year, third in the country. Florida State scored 20.
Wow.
We scored 50 less touchdowns. That's insane.
We were trash.
Tied for 133rd. So, you know, again, man, that's my thing. Like, Gus had good offenses at UCF, but bad defenses. Tony White had good defenses at Nebraska, but they had terrible offenses. If you can combine the best of both, and FSU has the ability to acquire more talent than both of those programs. You also add in a brain like Mike Norvell in there too, man, and Patrick Surtain, which is probably an upgrade from what some of these other programs had. I think you can get there. And, you know, again, even with Thomas Castellanos, man, like we just talked about, a team that's playing in the national championship pretty much has a running back as a quarterback. I mean, Leonard right now in the playoffs is averaging 171 yards a game with 3 touchdowns and 3 interceptions and 48 yards rushing. With 2 touchdowns there. And so, like, man, I mean, looking at Thomas Castellanos, Riley Leonard has a higher completion percentage because they probably dumped the ball off a lot more because they played to his strengths. But Thomas Castellanos was higher in yards per attempt, 8.5 to 6.8. And again, through 18 touchdowns, and he had 161 pass attempts. Riley Leonard had 349. And he threw the same amount of touchdowns. And so, again, man, I just think, like, when you look back to it, we're not trying to say that Florida State is a playoff team. But what we're trying to say is if you get what you got from the pieces that you brought in and then you continue to acquire talent, I know 2-10 happened. But if you wipe the slate clean and you move forward and you get what you got, you're on the doorstep. Now, like we said, you got to protect the ball. You got to score. You got to stay healthy. That's big. Yep. Yep. You need some injury luck and some turnover luck. It's not all just on paper. But, man, you can see where this team can be successful going into next year, whether that means 7-5, whether that means 8-4, whether that means 10-2 in a playoff bid. I don't know that. That we don't know until we see this team on the field. But just on paper, man, you can see the path to success.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I absolutely agree. Listen, watching that Notre Dame-Penn State game, I actually had a lot of hope that if we could get our offensive line together, you don't need a super elite quarterback. You need a quarterback that has, like, really good intangibles. And I would say that Riley Leonard has really good intangibles, but he's not a great quarterback. But neither is Drew Aller. But they have moxie. They know how to win. They know how to. Yeah. Well, Drew Aller doesn't know how to win because he threw an interception when you should the worst way possible. But you know what I'm saying? You saw that. You saw the coaches put their quarterback in a position to go win the game. And they had good defenses to back them up. So if Florida State, if Tony White can bring those top 20 defenses to Florida State, if Gus Malzahn can have a continuous top 10 running game with a quarterback who's not going to put it in trouble, who's going to be efficient, that when you get in the red zone, you're scoring 6, not 3. Yes, I could see Florida State at least being somewhere in the vicinity of an 8-4, 9-3, 10-2 season where we're potentially knocking on the door of a 12-team playoff.
Right. And again, we're not saying it's going to happen.
We're not saying it's going to happen.
But exactly. And, you know, the stat that we were talking about before the show, Penn State's wide receivers last night. And again, that game came down to a walk-off field goal. Michael, how many catches and yards did those receivers have? Nada.
Zero.
Not a single stat in the stat column. So it doesn't
5 targets, 0 catches.
It doesn't always have to be this big elite passing offense. I mean, again, just even think back to last year. JJ McCarthy was the national championship winning quarterback.
That's right. Yes.
And I mean, terrible quarterback. He's a terrible quarterback. So again, we just wanted to, it's off season. So we're just trying to do some things to look at some different aspects of why next year can be different. Right. Right. Again, I think we're all going to tread lightly. We're all going to have trepidations about saying certain things. I know I'm going to be more cautious after, you know, we had a little hopium last year. We're going to chill down a little bit on that. But again, the point is you can see the path based on the moves that they have made. And I think that's the important thing to keep in your mind, that it is a different team this year. It is a different schedule this year outside of, yes, you have Alabama on there. Yes, you have to go to Clemson and go to the Swamp, but the rest of the schedule is actually probably a little bit easier.
Yeah.
So you can see the path to having a successful season. And I don't know what it'll look like. I don't think it's going to look like last year. I really don't. And so that's just kind of what we wanted to bring you today. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that Final Four formula and some of the coaches grading staff that we did grading the coaching staff here. So one more thing I want to address before I get out of here, Michael, and this is just a thank you to some of the people, some of our watchers here and our listeners. We had some really kind comments on our last episode about you guys talking about, you know, this is your favorite podcast or we do a really good job. I just didn't want to end the show without acknowledging, if you happen to be watching this again, that, look, this is a passion project for both of us. We do this because we love Florida State. That's why we try to be positive. Now, we keep it real. We ask the tough questions during the season, but I just wanted to give a shout out to those that left those comments. We really do appreciate that. It helps keep us going from a determination because, boy, let me tell you what, after 2-10, I was like, are we really sure we wanted to keep doing this? But yeah, man, I just wanted to take a second to acknowledge that.
Yeah, man, we so appreciate you fans for watching, for commenting, for subscribing, for sharing. And let me tell you, if you want to show your appreciation to Plant the Spear, to Jesse and all that he does to keep this afloat, to everyone that contributes, man, like, subscribe, share, rate, review. Like all I think I said five things: like, subscribe, rate, review, and share. That's five.
Love it.
Yes, do all five of those things because that helps us get this out to more people. And it's not about, like, we're not trying to become famous, we're not trying to become rich. We're just trying to tell the story of our love and our passion for Florida State through just all the different avenues and talk about the thing we enjoy the most, which is Florida State football. So if you can like, subscribe, rate, review, and share, man, that would show so much appreciation. And we appreciate you because we wouldn't be here without you guys.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you guys are the reason that we do this. And, you know, I try and respond to most of the comments, unless it's a Miami fan or just a hater or something like that. And I keep up with the usernames. I watch. Right. Like, if you're a regular commenter and you don't comment, you know, sometimes I'll even find you on social media and be like, hey, you all right? Everything good?
Everything good? Yeah.
We're a family here. So obviously, again, just wanted to reiterate that I do appreciate you guys. And I do appreciate those comments because we had a pretty good amount of them on the last show. And so it does. We really appreciate that. So with that being said, we're going to call it here. Make sure you check out today's sponsor, Alumni Hall FSU. Use code SPEAR to get 10% off. And thank you guys so much for watching. We'll be back with you next week. Michael, who you got tonight? If you're watching this before it's already happened, who you got? I got Ohio State over.
I got Ohio State. I'm going to trust that they're going to pull it out and the SEC heads will blow.
Well, and if you want a tip, Ohio State has a better ranked defense. And what did I tell you? The higher ranked defense has won every single game so far. So with that being said, guys, thanks so much for watching. We'll catch you on the next one. And as always, go Knowles.